R-Y-A-M. Hello, Ryan. My name is Dr. Spatzel. I am here to help you. So, tell me about your problems. Sometimes, I wanted an Oculus Rift too. Suppose you got virtual reality, what will you do next?
Can I start off doing a little quick round robin of introductions? Josh, how about you? You're first on my screen, so you're going to get hit first with everything.
All right, well, not much to plug here, but anyway, I'm Josh. I developed Titans of Space, which I'm pretty proud of. I'm looking to do some more on that. I'm living in Southern California. I'm 34. I graduated from UC Irvine, which is across the street from where Oculus is now, so I'm kind of tempted to go back. That's about it. I'm just a software developer. I've got a day job and I'm trying to do all this Rift stuff in my spare time, just having a good time at it.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Kane, how about you?
Okay, I'm Kane. I am 32. I'm living in Alberta in Canada. And by day, I'm a lawyer. By night, I'm a enthusiast Oculus Rift quasi-developer working with Unity, just having an absolute blast with it. And just really excited all things VR and been hanging on, reading everything I could for a while and decided to give it a go.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Cyber, how about you?
Yeah, so Cyber Reality here. Most people that know me just call me Cyber. I'm 32. I have actually a background in game development, but now I'm the Oculus VR community manager, as I'm sure you guys know. And, you know, having a good time, just moved out to California recently for the job, and it's great out here, having a great time.
Oh, you actually migrated for the job? Where were you at before?
I'm originally from New York City. I was born and raised there, but I moved out here for Oculus.
So you couldn't have moved much further if you tried?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow, that's cool, man. Well, my name is Ryan, but I'm Cosbytron out on the Oculus forums and what other various forums. 34, so it sounds like we'll have the same generation jokes, which is good. living out in Cincinnati, I'm a data analyst by day and also budding wannabe game developer at night. Also in Unity, which I think we've all got in common. Drash, you said, are you in Unity or are you using a...
Okay. Unity.
Well, that's cool then. If we want to talk engine integration, if there's any UDK fans listening, they'll probably switch off, but we'll have a lot to talk about, which is, I think,
we'll give
cool.
them a reason to switch.
Right. Well, we might as well start here. I switched, I did start with UDK, and I didn't switch for any Rift-related reasons, but because I was struggling with Unreal Script. And when I found out that Unity, that C# was native to Unity, I was sold immediately. Like, I just completely stopped everything I was working on in UDK and went and downloaded Unity. So C# was definitely... Now, I love it for other reasons since, but I already knew C#, so that's just, you know, a huge head start. Did you guys have any particular reason for jumping on Unity, or was it just because...
That's the exact same reason I have to, because I know C# inside and out, because my day job, so...
Nice.
Obvious choice.
And it integrates it really, really well.
Well, as a newbie to all of this, I did some research on this, and it seemed like the consensus was that Unity was best suited for that kind of skill level or lack thereof. So that was a big carrot. And as well, I got to say, the 4-month pro trial offer that was coming with the dev kit order, that was a big inducement. And after trying it for a while, I just loved it. So stuck with it, got the pro license.
Yeah, I'm the same. I love it now. I mean, the C# thing brought me in, but I don't think I would switch back, even if I had to learn JavaScript. Or what's the... It supports Boo? Is that the third one?
Yeah.
I think so. Scripting is a bit Greek to me, but yeah, I'm dabbling a bit with both JavaScript and C#.
I think Unity is modular enough that you can actually get away without doing a lot of heavy scripting, right? I mean, are you using...
Yeah, I found that. I've worked with a lot of templates and have learned a lot from kind of reverse engineering, kind of tweaking certain things to see the cause and effect.
Sure.
The forums have been just awesome for that. And I guess on that note, I just want to say to Drash, I think you are such a great example of just a helpful mensch, because you are so generous with your feedback and the help you've given. It's just, it's awesome. So things like that have helped me kind of propel myself forward, kicking and screaming with scripting.
Yeah. Well, and actually, that's true, Drash. There are only a handful of people who are consistently providing feedback, especially in that Unity integration forum. So I probably owe you some props as well for times I've been stuck. And Cyber, it sounds like you've actually got, I mean, it sounds like you've either got Unity integration experience or you've been made to learn all of the different engines so you can participate in the forums, because you've definitely had, you've helped me out actually on a couple of things.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I knew Unity a little bit before this job. I wasn't like a pro in it, but I've definitely picked up a lot working with the integration and with questions people have on the forum and stuff like that.
Yeah, but yeah, you actually helped me out with the IPD thing, which I was stuck on and being probably an internet forum nuisance for a little while on the IPD thing until I got it sorted.
That's no problem. Josh? Yeah, I mean, they work pretty well out of the box. I mean, the integration, I mean, if you start getting into very custom kind of gameplay, obviously you're going to want to extend it and add your own code. But just out of the box, it works pretty well.
Yeah, and it's well commented, too. I mean, they definitely had an eye towards, I think, both beginners and really experienced coders. Sorry, Kane, what were you saying?
I was just going to say absolutely. I've loved working with that. And I've tried to make it a bit more complicated with what I'm working on, but, you know, it still has been slotted in flawlessly, I'd say.
Drash, it looks
but
like...
again, I'm new.
Well, but I think they've done a good enough job to sort of bulletproof it where you don't have to get into the C# of it if you don't really want to. But I was going to say, Drash, it looks like you've actually... Did you use the camera controller prefab, or did you kind of roll your own? Because I think you have some features that definitely aren't out of the box.
Yeah, I did extend it and hack it quite a bit, actually. And I even updated to the new, 0.23 SDK just by dropping in the plugin, but not all of the code. So now it's really kind of a Frankenstein mess now.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually avoided... I have not... gone to the latest version yet, just because I'm afraid. I haven't made many code changes, but I'm worried if I drop it in, I'm going to break something. And I've got that delicate balance of everything working at the moment. But Drash, some of your custom stuff, is it? I know you've got magnetometer calibration in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of your extensions on the camera controller script?
Well, basically, I actually disabled a lot of the stuff in the camera controller script. And kind of did it my own. I had to look inside the code there, obviously, to sort of mimic it, but, you know, in a way that I could use in a more custom way.
Is there any chance you could, because I'm particularly curious about your magnetometer calibration, because it's excellent, and I have done zero drift correction so far. Like, I've been a little bit intimidated by it. Did you find that pretty challenging to implement? Because you've got kind of an advanced system.
Not really. I basically just had to kind of follow through the code in the OVR mag calibration class and just kind of mimic what it was doing, just so that I could update the little blinky lights,
right,
and, you know, the screens and things like that. But I did find most important is to let the user escape and skip it just in case it's not working, the manual stuff.
Okay.
Because the automatic calibration works really well as long as there's something in the game that's compelling the player to look around in some way.
And when you're in the Unity inspector for the camera controller prefab, the pre-scripted calibration is just the magnetometer checkbox, right?
Right. I think it just says automatic or not, but I think that may have been the older SDK version. The newest one,
mm-hmm,
it's much more robust. It's nicer. You probably have to take a look, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like I'll definitely have to dig into it, because that's one of those things that there was a little bit of drift, or there is a little bit of drifting cause, and it's subtle enough that you don't notice it right away, but about 10 minutes in, it becomes really obvious that you're facing a different direction than you, if you're in a swivel chair, especially, that you're facing a different direction than you started in. Kane, have you run into that at all, or are you just using the built-in?
I've slotted in the newest version, and it works really well. You know, I'll start the demo or even in the Unity player with the Rift facing down. And, you know, as soon as I put it up to my face and kind of, like, look where I'm supposed to, it snaps up to where it should be. So it's worked pretty well.
Well, okay, so I definitely need to get on that. It sounds like I'm missing out on some of the good features.
Absolutely.
So, Cyber, when Oculus updates the SDK, do they make you put it through its paces so you're prepared to jump in on the forums?
Oh, yeah, totally. I'm one of the first testers.
So how do you feel about the current integration? Was there anything in there that you were particularly rooting for?
I think the new mag calibration is definitely a big feature. I mean, that was one of the things where, you know, certain games just wouldn't work correct without that calibration, like especially cockpit games, like racing, right, flight sims. It's definitely an issue. So I was glad to see that, you know, added. And it's going to improve. You know, we're still working on it for sure.
And this is version... It's 0.2.3, is that right? What is it?
That's right.
Is the UDK integration sort of in parity with the Unity integration as far as features, or is it as mature, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Well, right now I would say probably Unity is a little more mature just because the community is larger, you know, and we're putting more effort into it, but we still plan to support UDK, and we're going to be updating that at some point.
While we're on... engine integration, let me make sure I have hit some topics. Oh yeah, has anybody touched Torque? Their integration.
I looked at it a little bit when I was kind of doing research what engine I wanted to try, and obviously the open source aspect of it was really compelling. It's just really Unity, I think, had more ease of use, at least the belief at that point was. So I didn't really get into it too far.
Gotcha. And their Unity integration, I think, is all open source and homegrown, right? Cyber, that's not an Oculus package, right?
Yeah, that's not official support, but it's by the developers of Torque, so it's for them, it's official support.
Gotcha.
And I actually worked with the Torque engine a little bit a few years back. It's definitely a powerful engine. I felt like the code was very geared toward, it was based on the Tribes code, the Tribes engine.
Really? So I didn't know that.
Yeah, originally from, I don't know if it was Tribes 1 or 2, one of those games.
Yeah.
And so if you were making a game that was similar to that, or let's say a first or third person shooter, I think it fit well. If you were trying to make a different game, you could do it, but it required a little more work. Now, I haven't used it in a little while, so maybe it's improved. But it definitely looks like a contender. I mean, it's open source, it's free, it has a lot of pluses.
Yeah, I think it's one to keep your eye on, and I feel like when I was reading up on it, that somebody in their community is working to integrate a C# wrapper. I mean, I'm just too lazy to learn another language, I think, is what it boils down to. So does anybody have sort of a wish list? And we can stay, obviously, Unity-specific because it's, you know, what we're all comfortable with. Does anybody have a wish list for future integration, positional tracking aside, obviously, because it's not in hardware?
Well, I was kind of wondering if the manual calibration for yaw drift is ever going to be something other than looking up, left, right, 90-degree angles, or is there something going to be, you know, like 45 degrees to the left, 45 degrees to the right, and something like that is not so extreme with your neck movements?
Right, because you can't necessarily get 90 degrees in all directions.
I mean, I think the idea for, like, let's say an automatic calibration was that if you looked around in enough varied directions, it could potentially, you know, automatically calibrate. And that's one of the things. I mean, it's in there right now. I think it can be improved. So because obviously we don't want users to have to go through that calibration step, you know, every time they launch a game or every new game they play. So it's something we're looking into for sure.
That sort of touches on my big wish list item, which I think is not just mine, but a calibration file format that's portable between games.
Well, we have the configuration tool that just launched recently, and I think that, you know, could be improved in the future for sure.
Yeah, that's right. I was just using that. You can get it along with the Unity, the I guess any Tuscany demo. There's a file folder that's called Oculus Config Util or something like that.
Really?
Brings you through, yeah, IPD. It has profiles so that you could put in different people. So then they sit down at the station, click on the profile, loads their presets for IPD, has a little measurement tool, a little test scene to kind of get a sense of, hey, is this working? So it's, yeah, I've tinkered with it a little bit. I think it's good. So I'm just needing to do some more research on how to incorporate those values directly into my project easily.
No, that's brilliant. I was completely unaware. That's so it's actually, it's just with the UDK integration download?
Well, it's
just
actually
any
not
Tuscany
tied.
One, isn't it?
It's
yeah,
not
it's
tied
a file folder with it, though.
But, I mean, as far as where you get to it on the site, does it have its own download link now? Maybe I just haven't visited the downloads recently enough.
Yeah, I think in the C++ SDK, it's, okay. It's included in that one.
So that's part of my problem is I need to think to look into the SDK. It sounds like my wish list item is already ticked off. That's perfect.
Isn't it nice when that happens?
Oh, that's beautiful. Actually, I'm probably the second I get off this call, I'm going to go tinker with that. That's how jazzed I am about that.
I downloaded it from the Unity Tuscany demo file. It was packaged with that.
So I had thought about rolling my own IPD calibration based on the way Valve does it, based on the TF2 calibration tool, which seemed like it was as simple and as perfect an idea as I could imagine to configure IPD. Is the Oculus config utility similar?
It's basically like that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the green bars, yeah.
And do you know if that sets, obviously we know it sets IPD, does that also determine the distortion scale?
There is a setting for what lens you're using, A, B, or C, of course. Mm-hmm. There's also a gender, a height profile. Yeah, I understand that depending on what gender you are, there's certain commonalities that they can use to make the experience better. So it's advanced, I would say, from that standpoint.
Well, and it's brilliant because even if you're a very experienced developer, let alone a novice like myself, that's not knowledge you're going to have as a game developer about how the eyeballs work. And
research on the differences in genders and the relationship between interpupillary distance. And,
right.
I mean, this is, I would suspect, some fairly in-depth science we're talking about here.
Certainly not to kiss ass on Oculus, but that they're handling the brunt of that is, if they weren't, I don't think a novice would be able to integrate it this early on the way we are. So,
well, yeah, and I think from the standpoint of the eventual market as well. I mean, I had my Rift in the office a couple of times and was giving demos, and the variety of different people and backgrounds were just consistently blown away by it. And I think that it's going to be a major issue for, you know, your non-gamer types that, you know, the first time they hit VR sickness, they're going to have, you know, this natural aversion. They aren't going to have the inclination to kind of power through it. Whereas, you know, gamer types, enthusiasts like ourselves, you know, we'd probably still play with the thing even if you had to have a barf bag attached
right,
to it.
Right, exactly. So Kane, it sounds like you've done a good number of demos in your office.
Yeah, I get a real kick out of showing people it for the first time because, I mean, their reaction is just so great, and, I mean, they just have this grin on their face.
So do you have any anecdotal or off-the-cuff stats for us on VR sickness with your test subjects, your willing victims?
Well, I've tried to give them just kind of a little bit so as to not overwhelm them. I always kind of start them off on the Rift coaster. So I think that's just such a great introduction to it because got the scale, you got the pit in your stomach at the drop. And really it's, you know, around the first turns, I think the strafing motion, mm-hmm. The sideways motion, that's kind of raises some ire. But not too bad. And then, you know, show them the cinema and Titans of Space. And those ones are fairly, I think, gentle as far as, like, adverse reactions.
Right. Right, I'd agree with that. Have you done any demos, Drash, for anyone?
Just to my parents and, you know, a couple of friends. Nothing too major yet.
Did you do the same? You started them easy with, the roller coaster. I know what you mean, Kane, because it's pretty comfortable because it's sort of a cockpit experience, but it's actually pretty intense. That's been a first demo for a few people for me as well.
Yeah.
They end up grabbing their seat because they have that natural instinct that they're going to fly out of the cart.
And squealing and screaming and laughing. I mean, it's perfect.
But Drash, did your parents or friends struggle with getting sick immediately, or was it kind of a mix? Some people felt some sickness, some people were fine.
Well, I was very careful about it, just like I was very careful with myself when I first got the Rift. I just kind of took baby steps, and I made sure they did the same because I didn't want them to come away with a negative reaction or a negative, anything. But you know, I did want to show them just certain examples of, you know, cool things that the Rift can do, like the Reflect Toys, you know, fractal demo where you can kind of like shrink down and grow depending on where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very unique, and you know, people just don't talk about that one enough, I think. But yeah, I'm very careful. My mother, when she wanted to see the Epic Citadel one because she loves that on her iPad. I mean, she goes through that just to walk around. Just to take in the scenery and the view, and she loves it. And so when she found out it's there in all its beauty in VR, that was like a major thing. And she wanted to go really gung ho into that. She took that 360 controller and she just ran around, you know. And then she got sick, but she said she said it was worth it.
I think that's
very cool.
Probably a pretty common story. I didn't think about that though. That the Epic Citadel could be a gateway drug because a lot of people have used that on their phone and tablet.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll have to keep that in mind. Gateway drugs, Rift gateway drugs.
I'm really curious about your personal experience with VR sickness using this, because I got to say, like, when I was waiting for the Rift and kind of reading everything I could and all of this, I had myself convinced that there's no way I'm going to get VR sickness because, you know, I grew up on first-person shooters and garbage like that.
Yeah.
But when I got it, like, I was hit pretty hard. So yeah. I had to really give it baby steps the first few times doing it. Well, a dozen times.
Well, I had the reverse expectation. I knew I would get sick because I get motion sickness pretty easily. And back in the day... I used to get so sick, like the early crop of first-person shooters, Wolfenstein and Doom, would make me horribly sick. Like,
to hear that.
Descent, I've played 15 minutes of Descent. I could never play more than like 30 seconds at a time. It would make me so sick. And this is on like a 13-inch CRT back in the day, you know? But so I absolutely expected to get... I knew I would be susceptible, and I still am, honestly. I'm still trying to get my VR legs, and obviously that's a challenge when you're trying to develop something. But I feel like it does have one advantage. I don't know if you guys saw in the article I linked you to, and I've already forgotten the gentleman's name. Cyber, do you remember the author's name of the article I linked to? It's one of your colleagues, I think.
It might have been Tom. Was that Tom Forsythe?
Forsythe, yeah, it was. Thank you. He points out that developers are going to build up a tolerance to the VR sickness, and they'll not be able to treat it well, or because they don't experience the sickness themselves, they might not notice features of their game that are causing sickness or potentially could cause sickness. So I feel like in a really bizarre way, my sensitivity to it is almost an advantage, because when I am screwing around with the IPD, for example, or the world scale, or anything like that, I'm a decent gauge of how sick it might make somebody, I think. The downside is I can't play my own demo for more than like 15 minutes on a stretch. So hopefully everybody's not. I got one feedback from one guy who said he played it for something like an hour or two. So I guess people have widely varying tolerances. Cyber, have you? I'm sure you've observed some of that. People just have very different tolerances.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I gave a number of demos at GDC this year, probably at least 100, probably more people, and we were demoing Hawken, and which is, you know, it's a mech game. You're in a cockpit, and I think that helps, like having a kind of stable imagery, like you see the cockpit, and that kind of grounds you. Right. And but one of the things that we were showing people, because it was a big hit, was we put on God mode, and then we'd have them like fly up to the top of the map and then just free fall down.
Oh God.
And it's a very strong experience. People, you know, get very excited, they're screaming, and then like right as before you hit the ground, and obviously, you know, you're not gonna get hurt, it's a game. But you know, elicits the response. And maybe a couple of people, you know, said they felt uncomfortable or got kind of queasy, but out of, I don't know, over 100 or maybe more demos, I mean, it's a very low percentage of people that actually, you know, got sick from it. So,
well, Oh, go on.
No, I was just going to say myself personally, you know, when I first started using the Rift, a few of the demos that I tried, you know, I did get a little uncomfortable. I got a little queasy for a second. And there were some things that, you know, we could fix, some things we changed with the demos. But now, I mean, I use the Rift all the time, and I never have any problems.
And that does seem to be a pretty common experience, right, that you can acclimate to it. Or get your VR,
totally.
Get your VR legs is what is the expression people are using, right? So I'm not quite there. Hopefully, there's somebody out on the forums who's created a variation on Tuscany that they call VR training or something.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, somebody's got, and I don't know if it worked very well, to be honest with you. I didn't try it because I was afraid it would make me more sick, not less. But somebody on the Oculus forum has modified the Tuscany demo so that you can gradually, I don't remember what it was, but like they've got it so you can gradually increase convergence, thinking that maybe that's what was making people sick.
I think it gradually increases your field of view. Like you start off with kind of like a small hole through which to see everything, and you can kind of like increase it as you're more comfortable with it.
Did you try that?
I tried it, yeah. It was very interesting.
Did it seem like conceptually that might actually work or help at least?
I don't know. I had my VR legs at that point, so I'm not
sure. Well, because I'm curious, because for me, and I know there are a lot of different triggers for the sickness, but for me, it's not really the visual itself. It is the motion. And there do seem to be certain kinds of motion that really trigger the effect. But Cyber, you mentioned that the Hawken demo, you were using the Hawken demo, and it has like a cockpit view, and that there was a pretty low percentage of people who had a problem. And I think there might be something to having the fixed point of reference in space. And I don't know that it needs to be a cockpit. And cause I had actually considered having something, anything, extend from the player's body just a little bit, maybe a HUD element that was physically attached to the player's body so they had a fixed point of reference for their body always in their view. Any cockpit thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, the current state of the Rift, you know, the cockpit experiences are just, they're really tailor-made for it. When we see, you know, positional tracking, blah, 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 I think, you know, we'll be able to paint a little bit more outside of the lines. I mean, what I'm going for in mine, I have a body and, you know, it's a bit tough, and I think the experience won't be really good with a virtual avatar until you have kind of head tracking perfected. And I mean, there is some Hydra stuff going on there. I've tried to give it a little go as well, but you know, I think that's really more of a gimmick at this point.
Right.
It doesn't do the job well enough, but it's kind of fun to see, and I think it does show great potential, and you know, especially to help reduce this VR sickness.
Yeah, Kane, implemented where you use one of the Hydra controllers actually strapped to your Rift, right?
Yeah, I've done a couple different things. In one demo I have where you're supposed to attach it to your head and it kind of does head tracking for you. And I mean, it feels good on my end. It's just always a question if you can get the experience replicated on the other side. I guess that's nothing new to game devs like you guys. But the other one I have that you're actually to kind of hold it as it's coming out of your chest. And this one, it allows you to bend at the torso, and you can kind of like bend over, look at your toes, that type of thing. And, you know, I think that's almost as good because, you know, you kind of have to stiffen your neck when you play a bit and kind of avoid moving your head independent of the rest of your body for it to give a good effect. But, you know, being able to bend like that is, I think it's compelling. And, you know, certainly as it gets implemented better, I think people will get a big kick out of that.
One, it seems to... any kind of positional tracking really does, because I've experimented with the same. It seems to multiply the effective immersion. You know what I mean? It's dramatic. Like you first strap the headset on, and visually you feel incredibly immersed. And as soon as it starts recognizing, even just the Tuscany Hydra demo, as soon as you actually see your body projected into the virtual world, it's like an order of magnitude more immersive suddenly.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the more that we use this and we kind of get used to the idea that, no, you ought not move your head forward and back like that. So when you do get a demo that implements it, it's a nice treat.
Right. And Drash, you had a torso tracking with Rift or something, didn't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, with the Hydra. And same sort of thing, however you can manage to glue it to your body, but sort of center of the chest, like similar to what Kane worked with?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I found the torso tracking is more effective than the head tracking right now, you know, because we've got the neck modeling in place. That's good enough.
And it is really good, actually. I think it depends on the type of game, obviously, how much upper body motion is really going on if you have a sports game or... Where somebody conceivably is moving a foot or more to the left or right, I think that the absence of positional tracking is much more noticeable than if you're meant to sit and sort of look around. So speaking of positional tracking, this gets a little bit off Rift topic, but I've got to bring it up because it's got me a little excited. The renders of the Hydra 2.0 or whatever it's going to be called with the little clip-onable trackers. Have you seen this?
Yeah, the STEM thing, STEM. I don't know what that stands for, but yeah, I've seen that. It looks great.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. You know, I think the Hydra isn't great, but I think proof of concept and looking forward to seeing it improved.
The speculation is that you'll be able to support multiple STEMs, which is probably honestly a little cumbersome for casual gaming or any non-hardcore Rift application because you sort of have to ask yourself how many things are most players going to be willing to strap to their body?
Exactly, and how many different sources do you want to have to be getting these different items and kind of all Frankensteining them together?
Right, and I had that debate, honestly, and I'm still having that debate to some degree about whether or not I should stay Hydra exclusive, which I am at the moment, because for me, the Rift is like 80% of the virtual reality experience. I mean, it is the crucial component, but the hand tracking or, again, some way to project your body into the space is nearly as important a component, and the Hydra is just the closest thing, short of trying to hack together a GlovePi Wiimote or PS3 Move solution, which is obviously way, way beyond what a casual gamer needs to be willing to put up with.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I've put keyboard and mouse. I've tried to improve those for the project I'm working on. But I find if you're playing a game where your character is standing, you know, you ought to be standing. It feels better. It's more immersive. So, you know, the Hydra is great for that. You know, I'm going to put in the Xbox option on the Oculus prefab and give people a try at that. So, you know, I think it's important to kind of keep in mind, well, you know, what is your character in the game supposed to be doing? Because, you know, if you're walking around, it doesn't make sense to kind of be hunched over a keyboard.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I could totally agree with that. I mean, I feel like the games that probably work best right now with the Rift are games when you're sitting in a seat in the game, like in a racing game or in a flight sim, where it makes sense that you're sitting. But if it's a first-person shooter, you kind of want to be standing. You want to be turning around and shooting in back of you and getting that full experience.
Right. If you're sitting in the game, then your body's a little bit less confused, I think. Although what I found is a challenge, just in my own experience, I have kind of a tight workspace. I've already smacked everything on my desk a few times. while wearing the Rift. So I had to. I went out of my way to put in a readme, and I considered having a big bold floating in front of your face warning when you first loaded up the demo to make sure that you can wave your arms freely in all directions without hitting anything before you put the headset on. And I think that's going to be a real issue for more, not so much for games where you're going to have a gamepad in your hands, but I've got a game where you're meant to be flailing your arms pretty wildly. And,
I mean, even without those things, that's going to be an issue. I've had mine for about a month now, and yesterday was the first time I managed to knock a Coke over, and it got so close to spilling all over my laptop and everything. It was just brutal. And, you know, before I put it on, I was like, note the position of the Coke can.
Right.
Okay. Then, you know, I'm fiddling around, and, yeah, forget about it. So.
Well, yeah, because you were so successfully immersed that the position of the Coke can actually disappeared in your reality.
Well, exactly. And I was like, I kept bending forward, trying out the positional tracking further and further, and all of a sudden, there you go.
So that's a feature we need, actually. We need positional Coke can tracking. So that the Coke can is always represented in game space, and then not only will you not knock it over, but you can actually get a refreshing sip of Coca-Cola without removing the headset.
I'm genius. Thinking maybe a dedicated external webcam that just recognizes Coke cans. Just that proprietary shape and anything else. Like, if it's Mountain Dew, you're screwed. But Coke, you're safe.
Well, I think we need to talk to the Coke people, which I'm sure we all have contacts. And see if they mind putting, like, some sort of magnetic positional tracker in every can.
Hey.
I'm sure that's not
hard for them to do at
all.
Now that's a partnership.
So let's bounce along a little bit. Actually, I'd like to bug you guys about what you're working on a little bit more. It's a lot of the reason I asked you to join us today. I'm excited about what you guys are working on, and also because, honestly, you guys have been, all three of you, and obviously Cyber, you're absolutely required to, and maybe you secretly hate us all. I doubt it.
Okay.
But you're all very active on the forums, and very willing to provide people feedback. I'd like you to take a little opportunity, though, to get to talk about your own project and not just have to provide feedback on each other's. So, Drash, I want to start with you. Man, you've had a lot of success with Titans and well-earned success. Was that kind of a surprise for you when it took off? Did you just think you were doing something kind of for you and your friends to enjoy? And
yeah, well, it was really just for me. I just wanted to see what things looked like in VR, and it was just a fun thing to do. So yeah, I was really surprised at, just the consistent positive response that I got. And obviously that got me thinking about, you know, possibilities. And I just tried to absorb all the feedback that I could, from all sorts of sources. And, I'm working on it right now. It's undergoing open heart surgery, so to speak, you know, to try to take it to the next level. I'll keep the direction that I'm going to be taking, you know, under wraps for now a bit.
I was about to ask if we could get a little inside scoop of what awaits us. But okay, I'll hold off.
Just more stuff.
More stuff.
And it'll be a challenge to try to get a good response again, you know, with more stuff. I kind of doubt that I'll ever get that kind of response again in my life, so I was just really happy to see that. So I'll do the best I can.
Well, I think everybody's looking forward to it. I think you'll surprise yourself yet again. And I was surprised. I was telling you in IM just before we started the call, I was reviewing your changelog and am seriously blown away by the number of individual feature updates and additions that you've worked on since releasing the initial version. I mean, so this is definitely a regular passion and pastime for you, right? It doesn't sound like a once a month thing you've been working on.
Yep, all my spare time.
So I think you mentioned on the Oculus forums, but could you tell us what your inspiration was? I know you have a little bit of you had some inspiration there, right?
Yeah, a couple, you know, and the more I think about it, the more I realize how many different sources of inspiration there were. But, you know, basically from my childhood, I had, you know, a program on my computer called Solar Sim, and it was just your basic, you know, explore the solar system kind of thing, but, you know, bad graphics, obviously. And, you know, there was a documentary with Isaac Asimov as the host called Voyage to the Outer Planets and Beyond. And that was something I must have watched, you know, 10 times as a kid. And
yeah,
it was married to the music from Gustav Holst, you know, The Planets. And that was so well done. And, you know, that's always been kind of an inspiration for me, you know.
So it sounds like this is something you're going to stick with for a little while. Are you? I don't want you to have to, I don't want you to give away any of the new features. You know, we can all be surprised. Mm-hmm. But are you definitely thinking about trying to flesh this out into a full interactive virtual reality planetarium?
Yes.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're going to be doing this for a little while then.
Yeah.
You're not done and moving on to the next project just yet.
I had other projects on the side, but those are all kind of on the back burner now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can see why. It's funny though, I wasn't sure. I'm glad to hear you're still working on it because it's so mature. I could see you saying, "Okay, I did that one and on to the next." So it has so much potential to be a very complete product. I'm glad to hear you're actually doing that with it.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
So Kane, how about you? Now correct me if I'm wrong here, but the Night Bike demo is actually a portion of a larger horror game you're cooking up, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I've just approached this whole thing from a hobby perspective. I don't have any commercial intentions. I mean, I wanted to come up with something that I would want to see in the Rift. I'm like a horror junkie, so I love all that scary stuff. So I wanted to do something like that. So really the idea is that you'll have this kind of title screen where there'll be a bunch of different interesting objects, and depending on which one you choose to like manipulate, you'll get launched into a different kind of scary scenario. So that's kind of what I've been working on. And again, you know, I'm really, really new to this, so you know, the hope is to come up with something that people get a kick out of, really. So I'm learning along the way and having a blast. But at the end of the day, you know, I couldn't put myself in the same category as Titans of Space or anything like that. That's for sure.
So what's cool, and the commonality here, I think, will be that, you know, Drash clearly had something that he wanted to see in VR. That sounds like, Drash, you probably were thinking about what that would look like in VR long before you got your dev kit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Kane, you being a horror fan, were you kind of thinking the same thing? Like, one of these days, when there's VR, this is the horror experience. Or did it just kind of start cooking when you first got your hands on a dev kit?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily. As a kid, you know, when VR was kind of brought forward as something that was possible, but it really wasn't because it was garbage. You know, I was really interested at that point, and I was working on Commodore 64 as a kid too, making little games to show friends and family and things like that. So, you know, I've always had kind of an interest in game dev and that sort of thing, but when I was reading about the Rift and pre-ordered and was waiting, I thought, well, you know, it's a developer's kit, so why don't I give this a shot? And it had always been kind of an interest, and, you know, it's a huge learning curve, and, you know, I don't think I could have picked a hobby with a steeper one, you know, save heart surgery or rocket surgery. But, you know, it's been good fun. And, you know, I just got to thinking, and, you know, I have a bunch of different ideas of things that would be cool. You know, there was the horror thing, and then I thought, you know, the other one that'd be great is like a superpower simulator, where, you know, you can speed things up so you have super speed, throw big boulders around for super strength, that sort of thing.
Sure.
You know, it's just too many ideas, not enough time.
Right.
So that's the one that kind of won at the time.
Right. So, Cyber, is there any chance you find time to do your own hobby project, or are they keeping you swamped?
You know, I have some ideas here and there. I'm not really working on anything big at the moment. What I do here is mostly supporting the community. So I do test out things in Unity or in different engines to make sure they work, or to just test different ideas, things like that.
So I'm willing to bet you've actually gotten your hand... I don't know exactly how many games are out on like the Rift list and Rift-enabled. And obviously a lot of the ones on the Rift-enabled.com are either Vero or sort of speculated integration because somebody's announced that they want to integrate Rift. But there have got to be a couple hundred, to one degree or another, functioning Rift demos or early integrations. It really is probably a couple hundred. Do you think, Saber?
There's easily over 100. I don't know 200, but I would say, 100, 150 in that range, like different, just free demos, hobbyists, enthusiast projects, things like that. Plus the, bigger games that have added support for the Rift. We have, Half-Life 2, Team Fortress 2, Portal had beta support. I think they might have taken that out, but then there was, there's a few indie titles, Dark, Retrovirus. There's more games coming.
Are you personally pretty surprised at how much content there is so far before release?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I knew that it was going to be a big response just from, the success of the Kickstarter, but it's really surprising to see how many people, indie developers and hobbyists have come out to support the Rift. And not only that, but people that didn't even consider themselves developers have, learned development because of the Rift. It's really amazing. Right.
Hey, that's me to a T.
Kane, did you find, like you said, you had ordered a development kit, you thought to yourself, well, it's called a development kit, I might as well try to develop with it?
Well, yeah, and, like I said, the 4 month trial of Unity, something that, hey, maybe you can actually get a real chance to dive into this and see if it's something you can do. And, I was kind of looking for a new hobby, and, it kind of played to some natural interests as well, so.
So let's talk demos a little bit while we're on it, because there are a lot out there, and I have not tried them all. Unfortunately, I've not got enough time, and I've not got my VR legs yet. So I have sort of limited runs that I can have testing out demos. I'll avoid blowing any smoke, and even though I do dig Nightbike and Titans very much, I'll go ahead and leave them off my WoW list for now, so you guys don't...
No worries there.
Feel uncomfortable, but I've really enjoyed Blue Marble as well. It's a much more compact experience than Titans, right, Drash? But it's sort of its own just little, real quick, throwing you out into space, and then you die at the end, which is not something everybody wants to do in VR, but it's something that I think actually 4 or 5 people have put in their demos. What else other than Blue Marble? Well, obviously the coasters. I've only done the Epic Citadel coaster, which was really early. There are a couple more now that I've not tried, largely for fear of losing my lunch. And then, of course, the Tuscanies. How about you, Drash? Are there any demos in particular you've spent more time with than you thought you would, were particularly impressed with?
Yeah, there's a few. In the racing category, there's Rift Racer and V-Buggy. Those two were basically, for a while, they were my yardstick against which I would see how my VR legs are coming along.
Okay.
Yeah, I really enjoy them. They're really cool. And then the Miculus one, the one where she's sitting on a box in the water, that one was the first one that kind of gave me the idea that, you could have eye contact with, another avatar, a sense of space, that kind of thing. That was really cool.
Right.
Yeah.
So anything else, Drash, that you've spent more time with than you thought you would, or anything you haven't deleted?
I haven't deleted anything.
Okay.
It's all precious stuff,
Yeah.
The only other one I can think of right now is maybe the Super Nintendo VR one, where you're just kind of sitting in there in that room playing.
Oh, I didn't take that for a spin. I got the impression that it was just sort of took up your whole field of view with a Super Nintendo screen. Is it actually more like the VR cinema where you're in a...
There was a second version that someone, I think his name is BitSkipper, he posted later in that thread with his own sort of derivative, and that one is really cool. Definitely check that one out.
So that's a whole area of VR that didn't occur to me as far as sitting in a room to do something like play a Super Nintendo game, that I think obviously hit home with a lot of people with the VR cinema. Are there any of those other experiences I might want to check out? It sounds like if I can play the Super Nintendo game in a virtual room, even though I can play it in a real room, that actually appeals to me. I don't know why. How about you, Kane? Have you had any particular WoW moments or
oh boy, played tons and tons of demos. And, I think it's just a great barometer of the community and the excitement. You know, it'll be nice to see, you know, some of the more polished studios, what they'll come out with. I think they'll keep them under wraps until they're much further along. But the community part is great because you get to see things, you know, people are excited, want to get them out as quick as possible. So you see rough versions, cough, cough, mine. So that's great. I think, you know, the ones that I show to people as the introduction would be the ones that I'm most impressed with. So, like, I always show Rift Coaster first. VR Cinema is just great, and then Titans of Space. So those are the ones I think that are really most impressive. One that we didn't mention, Zombies on the Holodeck. I'm excited for that one because I just think it's got a lot of potential.
Right.
And I know that they updated it just recently, supposedly improving on the Hydra control, so I have to give that a shot.
Mm. That's cool. That one freaked me out, yeah.
Oh, God, the potential to be freaked out in the Rift is amazing. Slash terrifying.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Alone in the Rift, anyone?
Yeah.
I'll never forget that, yeah.
There's been some great, great videos of reactions to that.
I think Alone in the Rift is probably, I wouldn't say one of my favorite demos, but I think it's one of the most intense demos that I've tried, like, just in general, not just Rift, just in general, games or anything. It's like when I was playing that, when you get to the end, it's just like, it's terrifying. It's really amazing, you know, what you could do with the Rift.
Well, it shows that great potential for VR to bring you right into that experience and, like, get right to the core of those emotions. I mean, like, we've definitely seen fear and awe with some of the demos, and, you know, I wonder if we're going to be able to come up with things like, you know, loss or love. Like, I imagine having a kind of a Final Fantasy type game where you have a party that you quest with for hours and hours, you know, you watch them grow up / level up, and all of a sudden one of them's dying in your arms. You know, what kind of experience that might bring out, or, you know, even if Call of Duty or Battlefield or something like that did it really well, like, could you actually induce post-traumatic stress disorder in people?
Well,
you know, I guess, like, a legal claim against you, suing you that your game's too scary, that'd probably be best advertising out there, but, you know, like,
right.
I wonder if it has that potential.
So I know that there are some forms of VR that are already used to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's interesting because it also touches on the Rift's non-gaming applications, which I'm not super qualified to talk about, obviously, but, I mean, knowing what VR has traditionally been used for in the past, but how expensive even halfway decent HMDs have been, to get something affordable that lots of hospitals and lots of facilities and care centers could actually have access to, you know, something that's not $20,000, and with actually decent software that runs on a laptop, obviously the potential there is just sort of mind-blowing. I mean, Cyber, you might have more of an insight. I'm pretty game-centric in my knowledge about the Rift, but there's a whole other side to it, right?
You know, for the past, let's say, you know, 10, 15 years, what's really been keeping VR alive is these non-gaming uses. I mean, in the 90s, everyone thought it was going to be the future of gaming, and it looked really promising, but it kind of never happened. So there was, you know, definitely been interest from military and medical and researchers. But it's always been very expensive, where you had to spend $10,000-$20,000 on a headset that's not going to get, like you said, into hospitals or into maybe people that need it, that could use it, you know? So I think having a headset at a consumer price and have it be actually good is going to be a revolution, really.
Cyber, if you have no objection, any time where you get staticky, I'm just going to replace you with the Dr. Spatzo Sound Blaster voice emulator.
Okay.
That is, well, that's a blast from the past. Thank you for that.
Oh, you actually caught the Dr. Spatzo.
Yes,
wow.
I absolutely did. That is excellent.
I'm in good company then.
Yep.
But, you know, expanding on Cyber's point, I think, you know, I think of that 90-year-old, that fellow's 90-year-old grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at that thing, and, you know, the potential for something like that in a nursing home, or, you know, if somebody's infirm or whatever, like, I think there's a lot of different applications, and, you know, I have been somewhat aware of these commercial uses kind of, you know, since the 90s, and it had its kind of pop culture splash kind of in the background, but they aren't really publicized on the level where you're aware of it, the general public at least.
So, Drash, you made a point in passing that I think really applies to what Kane was saying about wondering how VR sort of improves the ability of, whether it's a game or any kind of, even if it's an interactive movie, improves the ability to engage emotionally. And you mentioned the experience of looking in an avatar, actually making eye contact in VR, significantly more powerful than, on a screen.
Yeah.
So, Kane, I think that plays exactly to what you're saying. And obviously there are things that have to be right. Like the uncanny valley is probably even deeper in VR, right? If everybody looks the right scale and size and looks like they're physically present, but moves like Robbie the robot and talks like Dr. Spatzo.
Spatzo, there you go.
There's going to be even more pressure for really high fidelity, especially humans, in animations, facial animations. Not necessarily fidelity of the models or whatever, because I don't think that's what really engages people. It's how convincing the animations are, and even having them look at you but not with completely dead, soulless eyes that most game avatars tend to have.
You know what's interesting on that point is that, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, actually, you sound perfect now.
Perfectly. Right, awesome. Yeah.
Well, I was playing, Half-Life 2 in the Rift, and I've played that game, 10 times over, But right. Playing it with the Rift, yeah, and seeing the characters, Alex and the different NPCs in the game, there was really a much closer connection. Like, you felt like you were there and you were, connecting with these avatars. And even though I had played the game, previously on a monitor and even in 3D, on a 3D monitor, playing it on the Rift really changed the emotional reaction that you have to the characters. So I think, in terms of the uncanny valley, I think actually VR could even, help bring us past that and, actually create these emotional connections, even if, the graphics aren't 100% photorealistic.
Right.
I totally agree with that. And, the way I think of it is, typically visual representations to us are all very passive. You're sitting back on a couch, or even with the other HMDs, you're looking at just something plastered to your face. But this just brings it so much closer to the experience of your own eyes and closer to the senses. So it's just, it brings you into this active type of engagement, I think. Like, for example, watching the Transformer movies, like the visuals in that are, they're insane. There's just this crazy calamity going on. But, my personal reaction sitting back and watching it is, probably some combination of, oh, that's CGI or meh. Right, I might just right. be totally desensitized. But, Half-Life 2 or Titans of Space and, just feeling absolutely dwarfed by these things. It's just so much more of an active engagement. And in a way, you're almost a captive audience. Because the only way to kind of back away from that, close your eyes or take the Rift off for a second. So it's really interesting, the implications for, the type of experiences that I'm sure people will come up with to kind of play on those things that, they got you, you're hooked. So, I don't think that we're necessarily going to be, so picky. Like, my experience with the Rift, I've never once looked at something and thought, oh, meh, I see corners, I see that type of thing. It's just, I'm so in there that I will be very, very accepting of, a lack of anything but perfection.
Right. Well, and I guess you're convinced that it's reality to some degree, so you probably are more forgiving of, or your brain sort of accepts, well, in this reality, that's just how that guy looks. He's purple.
Exactly. I think humans are very, very adaptable to the type of stimulus that we're given. And, it's not that, at this point, I feel like, this is my reality or anything like that. Like, I've never had any illusions of that. But, it just engages your sense of sight so fully, and you're so active in that, you have to accept this as your input. So you're just brought into a greater level.
But you do make an interesting point that as far as how it will change the way that you engage with something that in 2D you might have had a meh reaction to. And what I'm curious to see, and this is wild speculation on my part, but how this is going to challenge traditional game design. So everybody's going to want to play Call of Duty in the Rift. Absolutely. That's going to be the first thing on a lot of people's wish list. But if you actually...
Will it work?
Well, even if it works, if it's a comfortable experience, all that aside, if you actually look a guy in the eyes and feel that he exists and he's a real person, and then you pull the trigger, it's going to reignite conversations about violence in games, I think, which everything does. Granted, every couple of years, there's some reason to bring the conversation back up. But I think the conversation may have a little more weight to it in VR than it's ever had.
Yeah, it's making it that much more visceral and in your face. I think you're absolutely right. That debate's going to be revived, definitely.
So dragging this a little bit back to development focus, I think of all of our projects, Kane, you've got the one that's going to really involve avatars, human-like, ghost-like, but people, I think more so than what Drash and I are working on. I actually do have some AI in the game, but they're cartoony, which means I get to bypass the uncanny valley altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to create some sort of sense of attachment. There are these little guys that you're protecting in the full game, and I want you to want to protect them, obviously. So I'm working on giving them animations and behaviors that try to make them endearing, so you'll actually care about them and want to protect them. But I'm not overly concerned with what I have to do to trigger an emotion in the player, whereas it sounds like in a horror game. Have you started thinking ahead about if you have a companion character or a ghost or some other avatar, what you're going to have to do in VR in terms of how they animate, how close do they get to the player, how close can somebody actually physically get to your face before it's uncomfortable, that sort of thing?
Well, I've done some animation on a few different things, and I try to keep them, you know, somewhat further away for the player so you can't kind of see the seams, as it were. But, you know, the idea is just to give kind of like a shocking or uncomfortable or bad experience, if you will. You know, it's not meant to be kind of like a pleasant thing. It's supposed to give you a scare or a jolt, if possible. So the idea is that, you know, different scenarios would play on different fears. So, yeah, there might be one where you have a friend with you that has something horrific happen to them, and then you have to kind of run away to save your own hide. But, you know, those are all kind of different ideas I've got swimming around.
So I'm bouncing around topics a little bit, but... So we had prepared, or I had prepared a few little things that we might want to talk about. And one of my topics here that I've got written down is overturned assumptions, meaning is there anything that you expected would be awesome in VR totally does not work, or does not work the way you expected it would? Drash, how about you? Anything that once you implemented, you realized this is just not going to work?
Well, yeah, I mean, I worked on, you know, Titans of Space for about a month before I even got my Rift, and so obviously there was a little bit of polish to do afterwards. But, you know, when I first put the Rift on, I was like, you know, there's some scale that's off here, even though I meticulously measured everything out to, you know, 1 meter equals, you know, 1 unit, that sort of thing. So, you know, the scale issue isn't quite set in stone. You still have to kind of see for yourself. Yeah. There's no substitute for that, unfortunately. So that was interesting. And, you know, of course, the text thing, you know, text has to be giant in order to read it for now, you know.
Right. Well, and I would think even when the resolution improves, text is... It's not just the resolution with text, right? It's does the text stay fixed in the player's vision, or does it stay fixed in the game world? Have you had any UI difficulties with that sort of thing? This is going to float outside somebody's field of view, or it's just straight uncomfortable to focus your eyes on the text, anything like that?
I had some things that were just too close to the player's eyes for a while, and that was something I was like, whoa, you know, and you can zoom in on those things, and that's even more of a profound effect. That's kind of amusing, actually.
Right.
But one thing I found was that, you know, even if something is not going to fit in your field of view, that might be okay because you can just look around and take it all in. You don't just need to fit everything in front of you. You have to the sides, above you, maybe below you. So there's actually a lot of screen real estate.
That's a good point. That opens up some HUD possibilities. Obviously, in a cockpit game, in a mech game, you can look to the left and see that you have some dials to the left of you, but there's no reason... In a first-person shooter or adventure game, you couldn't have HUD elements just over your shoulders or slightly below you, which actually is kind of rad. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I may have to steal that one from you. I'll delete this part out of the podcast so nobody knows I stole the idea. So, Cyber, have you, having tried as many demos as have you tried, do you have any ideas about what works and what does not work for HUDs? Because, especially for games, obviously, there are going to be HUDs. There's no getting around it.
Well, I mean, I think the best thing, or the most kind of natural thing, is to integrate it into the game so it's not a, you know, a text floating in the air, but you actually see it. Like, if it's a gun, if you look down and there's a little LCD, you know, on the top of the gun that shows you your bullet count, or, or you know, different, or if it's like, you know, a game where you're losing life, maybe you don't see a life bar, but, you know, your arm gets blood on it, or there's some sort of visual indication that you're hurt, you walk slower, things like that that are integrated into the experience and not just, you know, text floating in the corner, because I think that is probably not the best experience.
So you feel like maybe with the text floating in the corner, the tech that becomes a constant reminder that you're just playing a game?
I mean, I think it could work. I mean, you could definitely do it, and games have done it and made it work. But I'm saying, if you integrate it into the world and you make it a convincing, realistic experience, I think that's ultimately going to be better.
Right, a little bit more natural for the player. So, Kane, do you... You'll have to remind me, because now it's been a minute since last I tried it, but you don't have a HUD right now, right?
No, I don't. And for text, I've just, you know, plopped 3D models in. I mean, partly for ease, but, you know, partly because I think it looks cool. You know, the show Fringe, how they did their titles, kind of inspired by that. And, you know, I've just kind of done some animations playing with placing them in different areas. Like you say, you know, there's potential to use all this additional real estate over your head, you know, to the sides, that type of thing.
So I only have one very simple in-game menu at the moment, but it's rendered in 3D space, which looks cool, but was actually to make my life easier, because there's some complication trying to draw your 2D HUDs to both cameras and then having them converge at the right point in space. And then that can change depending on the resolution, depending on, you know, if you've hard-coded something as 300 pixels from the left, you're a little bit screwed when it comes to convergence once the resolution goes up. So right now, all UI elements in my mind are 3D and exist in the game world only because I know that they're going to render correctly in 3D space.
Yeah, I agree. Good point.
It could just be a cheat, too, because I'm too lazy to learn to code a 3D, 2D UI. 3D, 2D UI? Is that the 3D, 2D?
Hey, you know, sometimes it can just be that the easiest way is the best way.
Right. There you go. So, recently I gave Dark a shot. Have you guys had an opportunity to check that out?
Not yet.
So it's, actually looks like a very cool game. I don't mean to demean the game by giving it a simple explanation, but I think this will give you an idea. It's almost Splinter Cell with vampires. And it has native Rift integration, and actually, I think his name is Archie on the Oculus forums, has been extremely helpful. Like, the developer is clearly interested in perfecting the Oculus feedback, because the initial integration was a little bit wonky, and then they got some stuff straightened out with a Steam Pipe update. But it's a third person game with native Rift support, which I hadn't played in demos yet. I know that people had experimented with the idea. Do you guys have any thoughts about whether or not you think third person is even going to work in virtual reality? It's unclear what message you're sending the player. Are you somebody literally walking behind this guy? Are you God looking down?
I haven't played that particular game. I think it's interesting that people are experimenting with, you know, between first person or third person. I would definitely like to try it. So I can't really comment on whether it works or not, but it's definitely interesting that they're exploring it.
Well, it does make you think about how AAA franchises will adapt, because I'm optimistic enough to think that lots of AAA franchises, if I can get the word out, are going to experiment with some kind of Rift integration, but your Assassin's Creed and Splinter Cells of the world are designed as third-person experiences.
I think they're going to be forced to at least consider it eventually. And, you know, I think there's probably going to be a bit of stubbornness you know, especially with these tried and true formulas that people rely on. And I would not be surprised if the most compelling experiences that come out are just, you know, kind of bizarre projects from, you know, indie developers. I don't know if you've heard of this project, Sound Self. No. Robin Arnett, I think, is the creator. And I haven't been able to try the demo. I was a backer for it, though. And it's kind of a transcendental meditation thing. I hope I'm doing it justice, where you would chant into your microphone and get visual feedback based on that and try to sustain a tone.
Okay.
And apparently it will, like, harmonize back with you. And I read a review of somebody who tried it, and they thought it was just great. Cyber, have you gotten a chance to try that one?
I haven't actually tried that, but I'm familiar with what it is.
Well, yeah, so, like, all kinds of neat experiences like that, I think those will kind of be the most mind-blowing experiences, you know, until things get really, really perfected with positional tracking and, you know, you can actually do a Call of Duty or a Battlefield justice.
I know, Kane, you had just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge it and have a quick talk about the Rift community, which extends it very active, obviously, on Oculus's own forums. But there's obviously a huge community on the Meant to Be Seen forums and on Reddit as well. And I'm sure, actually, I've found just by following link backs off of my site, a very active German community, a very active South American community. There's Realo Virtual. I don't know if you've seen, but probably both of your games are featured on it with conversations if you want to look it up and see what people are saying about you in Spanish, which is always nice.
I will have to babblefish it, or perhaps Dr. Spatzo. No, but yeah, the community, I just wanted to say, you know, it's a really interesting thing, you know, from my perspective at least, that there, it seems like this is a really unique thing that doesn't really exist, you know, in traditional game development, where you have a whole bunch of people shooting out demos and, you know, trying to help each other improve things. And, you know, that's where the feedback is just so key. And I was saying how Drash is just so consistently generous with doing that. And I mean, it's not easy to play crummy things, my game, or things that are at a rough stage. But, you know, the feedback, it really helps you, because you can get just willful blindness to the issues. And, you know, it's just crowdsourcing that thing is helpful. And, you know, I think people with Rifts, developers, enthusiasts, they're hungry for content. So, you know, it's kind of nice to help feed that as well. And, you know, it makes you feel like less of a crook for getting a developer kit. But right. There's one other fellow I just wanted to mention quickly. He's just been awesome, has come up with some music. He's a professional, SWLU on the forum. He's okay. Actually the guy who posted about that excellent VR cinema first, I think. His name's Steven Liu. His site's chibola.com, and he's given me some just, like, excellent originally composed music for my game, and that is definitely the best part of it right now. So, I mean, it's just, you know, you get some really interesting, nice, generous folks.
Heck yeah, that's very cool.
Absolutely.
Drash, you've been one of the feedback providers, one of the more prolific feedback providers. Do you have a secret source when you're stuck? Or have you been figuring it out all out on your own through trial and error?
I think I'm just good at banging on it until, you know, everything's working and everything. But, yeah, I appreciate it when other people leave feedback, too. And I think that more people should do that. They should.
Yeah, and I should be better about that, too. And, I mean, you know, you don't want to hurt people's feelings. And, I mean, I wouldn't take it that way personally. You know, any feedback's good feedback, and you know, it's just nice to support people, because especially when they don't have commercial intentions or one-man bands, you know, whereas other people in studios, they'll have, you know, whole support system telling them, oh, yeah, you're doing good, kid. So it's nice, and I think, you know, it really fuels people, you know, myself included, to get comments, you know, even if they aren't, like, glowing, because you can't expect everybody to like stuff, even at a rough stage.
Yeah, actually, I'm with you in that I need to get better about it. When I released something playable, I had an immediate realization that I'm really terrible at giving feedback. Because I had that thought, like, oh, man, I wish somebody would give me a little bit of feedback. And I was like, well, when do I give feedback? I'm terrible about it. So actually, it I'm all the more impressed with how many people do leave feedback. When you consider that they're what, Cyber, correct me if I'm wrong, but something like 10, 12,000 kits out there, is it that many now?
It's more than that. It's
wow.
Yeah, It's like 15 plus, probably more.
Wow. Well, so, okay, so it's actually the community who has access to one is sizable, I guess, relative to what it was in the early days. But when you think about it in the wider gaming world, or, not, again, not just gaming, but when you think about it in the wider computer world, it's still a small enthusiast community that's incredibly vocal. I know there's a much larger audience. Obviously, if you look at the gaming blogs and the tech blogs, Oculus is there every other day. So there's a ton of interest, but there definitely seems to be a small, hardcore, vocal community, which is actually of the more productive, polite type. I think I have reservations about forums in general, but actually, Cyber, to your credit, actually the Rift forum is actually a pleasant place to hang out.
Thank you. Which is a rarity on the internet.
Has that been a challenge for you to kind of keep that helpful vibe? Because there is a helpful vibe. People kind of want to boost everybody's project.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with how the project started. You know, with Palmer on the Meant to Be Seen forums. And how it, you know, turned into a Kickstarter. And the whole thing was a very kind of grassroots effort from hobbyists and enthusiast people on the forum. So I think because it got that start, you know, through collaboration, through the forums, that the kind of people it's attracted are exactly those type of people that are helpful and they like to be, you know, part of the community and that kind of stuff.
So do you have to kind of keep your toe in multiple waters? Obviously, you've got immediate responsibilities on the Oculus site and the Oculus forums, but are you, you know, I know you can be found on Meant to Be Seen, or do you have to check out Reddit? Have you seen these international blogs and forums that I mentioned? And do you try to see the global community, not just the active on the Oculus forums community?
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep up with as much as I can. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of different forums. There's a lot of content. You can't possibly keep up with everything. But
sure,
I try
to
just keep tabs on as much as I can just to make sure, you know, obviously on our own official forums, on Reddit, and, you know, different sites. So, you know, I do what I can.
You're doing a good job, Cyber.
Thanks.
Definitely. Well, and again, was super impressed that you actually have tech chops on top of it, responding to quite a few things in the integration forums.
Cool.
And actually, there's some other... So you have some of your software guys who actually hop in on the forums and help out too as well. Is that right?
Yeah, some of those guys are on the forums too. I mean, a lot of what I do is, you know, I try to read as much of the problems and what comes up in the forums and then give feedback to the rest of the team. So if there's a question that I can't answer, I could just walk up to the guy who coded it and ask him, you know? So I could definitely get in there and get, you know, get the right answer if I need it.
So can I ask you, not to put you on the spot, but do you have anything that you're excited to see out of the community or would like to see out of the community? And that could be anything from there's a certain type of demo that you haven't seen yet and you're hoping somebody's got it cooking, or there's community initiatives like more meetups. You know, Drash had mentioned meetups earlier. Is there anything you kind of hoping to see?
Well, I mean, one of the things I'm excited about is to kind of see finished products. Because right now, like I said, there's probably 100, 150 different demos, Oculus demos out there. A lot of times people might have had assets for a game, and they kind of just drop in our OVR player controller. And you could kind of walk around this environment, but it's not really a VR game. It's a tech demo. So I'm really excited to see. I mean, it's early now, you know. People are just getting their Rifts. They've had them maybe for a few months. But as time, you know, goes on, we'll start to see more completed projects and more, you know, commercial games and things that people put 6 months, a year, you know, into. I think it's going to be really exciting.
Right. It does. It's good to remember that the dev kit actually hasn't been out all that long in the grand scheme of things. So most of what we're seeing is real early work.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Drash, have you given any consideration to what it means to be Rift exclusive, and if your experience is going to work outside of the Rift, have you given any thought to making a non-Rift version?
Yeah, it's definitely going to have a non-Rift version. It's just not going to have that same impact, you know. It already has that option. But I tell people, you know, if they have a Rift or they have one on the way, just wait until they have a Rift to experience
right.
it.
Right, because you want that first-time impression to be the best possible impression.
Right.
How about you, Kane? Have you given any consideration to Rift exclusivity?
I mean, if using that was my intention, Rift exclusivity, but you know, using Unity, it's just so easy to drop a single camera in there as an alternative. So I did put up a quick one on Reddit just to get some feedback on controls, that type of thing with a single camera. So I think, you know, it'll depend on what type of game you're using, but with what I'm doing, you know, first person horror type of situation, it's so done on 2D screens. It's really easy to translate, I think.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because there's this whole concept of designed for VR. And what does that really mean? The more you design something for VR, in theory, the less it's going to work outside of VR. So at a certain point, you might have a moment where you're like, well, this has to be in Rift because it's not going to work outside. There's just no way it's going to work. Which I think, for me personally, is something I'm shooting for.
I don't know. I think, you know, there's certainly different considerations that you have to keep in mind. Like, you have to worry about scale, obviously.
Right.
You know, I think, generally speaking, you're probably going to have to be much more careful with game-breaking type of things when you're dealing with design just for VR versus another thing. Because, you know, in 2D, you lose a life, you walk through a wall, big deal, right? But,
right.
You know, in VR, in Heli Hell, I had some fun crashing people through the ocean in that thing. And, you know, it doesn't feel good. It's not a pleasant experience.
Right.
So, you know, the potential to give this kind of bad, visceral experience with a game breaker, I mean, there's definitely different considerations. But, you know, again, and it varies so much depending on what type of thing you're trying to do. Like, you know, what I'm going for is more like a interactive horror movie, if you will. And,
right.
You know, that's no good on a 2D screen. Like, you know, a thing like an Alone in the Rift that gets such a great reaction in VR, I mean, I can't see it scaring the 5-year-old on a 2D screen.
Right.
You know, it's just, it brings you into a whole nother level.
So, Cyber, do you have any thoughts on what makes a game, what makes a game truly a VR game versus a traditional game that was adapted for VR?
There's a few things. I mean, I think one of the main things is kind of the pacing and the speed of the player and of, you know, different situations in the game. Whereas, like, maybe a first-person shooter might not translate that well, but maybe a game like, let's say, Dear Esther, which is also first-person, but it's a much slower-paced kind of game, actually works better. So I think, you know, we'll probably see, I mean, we'll see a lot of different games, of course, but what I'd like to see is, you know, games that really try to push, you know, the VR aspect and to tailor to, you know, to that, to the Rift and to VR. So I think, you know, games like Myst or different games where you just kind of walk around and you just go on the floor and pick something up and open a book, you know, things like that, I think are very powerful in VR, but they might be, you know, boring on a 2D screen. So
right,
I think experiences
right.
like
Absolutely.
That, there's a lot of potential there.
Sort of where, not to be cheesy about it, but games where sometimes the environment is the star, right?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, like, how much time did you guys spend stacking up those books in that Hydra demo? I mean, it's a blast even doing something so simple.
For sure.
Right. Now, do you think the wow factor wears off a little bit and you have to find new ways to keep the player engaged because they're no longer just impressed that it's VR? Because that's
Are you talking about VR gateway drugs again?
Yes. Well, more, I mean, so right now, it's easy to drop somebody off a cliff and have an amazing VR experience. But a year after release, people are going to have fallen off VR cliffs 1,000 times.
Well, I think, you know what I was saying earlier, that people are so adaptable. You know, you get desensitized to everything. You know, I think you know, VR will be the same eventually. And not to diminish the experience, but, you know, everybody gets blasé about something when it's around long enough.
Mm-hmm. So, Cyber, the article that I mentioned earlier from Tom Forsyth, Mm-hmm. You think we could look forward to some more sort of good VR game, good VR experience practices type documents? Because this is profoundly useful to me.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I think, you know, we're doing a lot of interesting research here, and we'd like to, you know, share what we can. Have you seen the, you know, the post that we've posted already? So it's something we plan to keep doing, yeah, for sure.
That's good to hear. This type of answers the question I just asked, which is what makes a game a VR experience, and how do you make it comfortable for players? I mean, when I read this document, I realized I was doing something wrong immediately, which was sort of the purpose, right? I realized I was thinking of distortion scale the wrong way, and I had it set off default, probably incorrectly, not based on the cup size or anything. And something, honestly, people probably wouldn't catch in play testing because it's too subtle a thing. So that's my vote for very thorough best practices documents. Get on it.
Okay.
kidding. That was fantastic.
You know, I wonder if there's going to be some stubbornness with those sort of things because, you know, you can give somebody advice, but whether they follow it's another thing. And I think it's one of those things that you have to see to really believe, like, what the Rift does. I know waiting for mine, I try to imagine what it was like, and, you know, it was surprising in a way. So, you know, will people necessarily worry about these things until they actually try it themselves and say, oh, that's really unpleasant? I mean, I guess that remains to be seen.
Well, and I think that'll be the big trick. I'm even reluctant to show it to people who I think might get sick easily because I don't want them to get an initial reaction that, oh, that VR is something that makes me sick, and then they're not interested from there on out.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Kind of one of my concerns. Cyber, I got to imagine it's a concern for you as well. You want to make sure that first experience is as comfortable as possible, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that that's another potential best practice, that no game should open with you being pushed off the cliff, and maybe you should be eased into being pushed off the cliff?
Well, the thing is, I mean, we don't want to give game developers restrictions, right? I mean, VR is this new experience. It's a new frontier. We don't want to tell people you can't do this. You know, I think a lot of the things that are going to come out of the community, we're going to learn as we go along what works, what doesn't work. So it's going to be a learning experience for everyone, I think.
Well, and that's one of the fantastic things about all these community demos is people are trying things that a AAA game is not necessarily going to try. They'll probably play it a little bit safer for a little while. But in the community, you've got, gosh, just all, well, again, the games where you die, the guillotine game,
yeah,
right?
Disunion, yeah. And those are the experiences I really want to see, like things that are absolutely shocking and, you know, horrifying and all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, and also pleasant, maybe, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's definitely room for some pleasant experiences in
right. this. Right, it's like a BioShock game. It's like 98% terrifying, but like 2% pleasant, which is better than zero. So, guys, I won't keep you. We're about 20 minutes out from the time I stole from you all. So I want to go around one more time, just collect anybody's final thoughts. Drash, you first.
I'm still kind of reeling from, you know, all the implications of the Rift and all the different applications that are going to come around. And I was just looking at my list here to see if I left anything out that I wanted to talk about. And there was one last thing, which was that, you know, when I was playing around in that Rift Racer demo, you know, there's a couple of cars in there that are just kind of like driving around on their own. And, you know, if you felt like it, you can just ram them. And you can try to flip them, whatever, and your own car takes damage. And it's actually very interesting because you can kind of get a feel for, you know, how accidents might occur, you know, in reality, real reality. And start to be thinking, you know, this would be great for driver's ed. So,
yeah, like time to exchange insurance details.
Actually, it would be perfect for driver's ed. Like probably the only reason, obviously that's how pilots train, you know. Or airline pilots at any rate, right? They have simulators, but your average hole-in-the-wall driver's ed school probably can't afford the flight simulator that airline pilots get to use. So, I mean, that's exactly like we were talking about earlier. There's applications where people couldn't afford $20,000 virtual reality caves that can afford this. That also kind of makes me wonder if it'll be used in crime scene reconstruction as soon as you said you can see how the accident happened. You know how now...
That's a very interesting idea.
Yeah, they do. There's already 3D modeling crime scene reconstruction, so now...
Ballistics and... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just put everybody in the jury gets to be the victim. That's terrifying. That's a horrible idea. they definitely shouldn't do that. So how about you, Kane? Any final thoughts, anything that you'd like to cover while we've got a few minutes left here?
Well, I've really enjoyed chatting with you guys, and, you know, if anything, it's probably better than us continuing to bore our friends that aren't so VR inclined.
Right.
Give them a little bit of, stress relief break.
Well, and to be totally honest, that was my motivation. I wanted to, connect with a few people in the community that I could really geek out with. I think I'm reserved in my excitement about the Rift with a lot of my friends. And I do have friends, actually, who are very excited about it, but not so much from the development angle and what can I make for it, and probably don't want to talk about it as much as I do.
Seeing is believing to a large extent with this thing, I think, too. And until you actually get it in your hands, you know, it sounds cool in theory, but, you know, it does really blow you away, I think, when you first get a chance to look through it.
Right, and you're right. It is sort of you might not realize how excited you are about it until you've gotten to use it.
And certainly everybody at my office that I gave a demo to, I think, if there was a consumer version available right now, they'd be more than happy to plunk down money for it.
Yeah, I'm already getting the same vibe as well. I think there are people who would do it just for virtual roller coasters. Seriously. If it was a $300 or $400 virtual roller coaster simulator, I think you'd still have pretty big market. So, Cyber, how about you, man? While we've got a few minutes left, is there anything you'd like to get in?
Yeah, there was one thing I was thinking about, was that in VR, this kind of sense of self hasn't really been explored that much, and I think there's a lot of potential there. Just even like, let's say with like the Sixth Sense demo, where you see your hands and you can interact with the environment, even though you're not even seeing a full body, just being able to see your hands kind of attaches you to that experience. And there was this other demo I tried. It was like someone kind of hacked the Tuscany demo. So you were like a girl and you were looking in a mirror. I don't know if any of you guys had tried that.
I didn't try it. I saw the post.
Yeah, but it was.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask you about that, Cyber. If you guys have done any research into, kind of discordant images, getting any unpleasant effects from being represented as, something way, way different than you actually are in person.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the demo was very interesting because you stand in front of the mirror, and, like, as you move your head around, the avatar also moves their head, And it gives you this connection. That I feel
you
like
you felt connected to it.
Yeah, like you feel like, okay, now this is my body, and it's just such a simple demo. It's so kind of bare bones, but even just that head movement tracking really gives you a different kind of sense of where you are and who you are, and I think that could be very powerful in VR.
So did you really self-identify when you look in the mirror? It didn't just creep you out like, oh, that's weird, but like you actually like, oh, that's me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I still knew who I was, but just seeing kind of made a connection in your brain, which I thought
you can suspend disbelief.
Yeah, for a short period of time, just for a little bit, but it's interesting. And you think if there was more connection, like it was tracking your full body, like with a Kinect or something like that, where like you would really feel like it was you,
Right. Did you see the demo? It's not a downloadable Rift demo, and I completely forgotten the guy's name, but it's a VR researcher. I don't know if it was MIT or where, but who actually used Kinect to project his body into a little Doom 3 corridor.
Oh yeah, yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
I saw that. Yeah.
That was insane. That might be a little while off from a consumer product, but that's sort of the ultimate expression of literally putting yourself into the virtual world. So not to plug my own work, but in COS, I had some questions about presence and your sense of self because the character has wheels, not legs.
I'd like to ask you to kind of give us more detail about your project and what you've been aiming for. You've been kind of letting us do the yapping.
Oh, thanks, Ken. I appreciate that. I'll try to stay brief on it, but So I've been, just the real quick background is I've been modding and I tinker with mods for fun, and I've created some very small games, but always for myself. Never actually so much as released a Quake 2 map, although, I mean, that's how far back I've been experimenting with mods was Quake 2 and Unreal Tournament mods and maps.
Dr. Spatzo.
And Dr. Spatzo. And Prodi the Parrot, if you had a Prodigy.
Oh, God.
That was the follow-up to Dr. Spatzo. So anyway, Kane, much like yourself, when I first backed the development kit, I had not made up my mind. I knew I was going to tinker with the development tools because that's just a given, but I certainly hadn't made up my mind to finish something. But I started working on Cause probably 2 months before I received the kit. It's a very weird thing to work on something for 2 months and not actually get to try it.
Yep.
And it's nerve-wracking, actually, because I was concerned that I might put the Rift on and find that I'd failed. Like, this does not work. You know what I mean? But I figured it was worth the risk. I put it on, and it actually, not only did it work, but I was better in the game than I had been testing it in 2D. You know what I mean? Hmm. With the, I don't know if you've seen the videos of it, but it's grappling with the Hydra.
Yeah. And I love anything with Hydra. I get a kick out of it.
I put the headset on, and even I hadn't integrated any kind of Hydra calibration, but I was actually immediately better at the game. So yeah, so it's the inspiration was honestly just my very first thing I wanted to do in VR was swing off of something. It was really that simple. I saw the Hydra, and it was the first, like, I kind of want to, I love grappling games. I loved the grappling in Super Metroid, like Bionic Commando, pretty much anything with a grappling hook. I'm not saying, like, grappling is my favorite genre, although I should say that since I'm making a grappling game. But it just struck me as a fun VR thing to do. The rest of the game is just sort of emerged from what works and what doesn't. So, for example, the fact that Cause has wheels is because I realized early on that for it to work in VR, the motion was going to have to be momentum-based, meaning, like, when you press up on the analog stick, you don't go from 0 to 60 in a split second, because that's definitely vomit-inducing. And you don't just accelerate at a fixed rate, either. Like, you have to accelerate and decelerate in a way that seems like it would really work that way in the real world. And wheels just seem to lend themselves to that much better. I actually, starting out, he had legs. It wasn't the plan to use wheels from the beginning, but I find the motion from the wheels. And I'm actually using the Unity Wheel Collider, by the way, which works great. And that type of physically modeled motion seems really comfortable in the Rift, much more than either a 0 to 60 in a split second, which is definitely not comfortable, or even a fixed rate acceleration, where I press up on the analog stick and it always takes me exactly a half a second to reach top speed, for example. Hmm. So yeah, so most of my work up until a few weeks ago, pretty much up until I released the demo, which is not a demo of the full game, it's just a demo of the swing mechanics. It's actually, there's a whole bunch of simulation elements and stuff I'm working on, but up until a few weeks ago, all my concentration was on just player movement. Pretty much nothing else. All the assets are stand-ins. I just wanted movement to feel comfortable, and obviously I wanted the swinging to be fun. So the reason I put the demo out there was to hopefully get the feedback that yay or nay, this is fun, because if the swinging's not fun, I might not have the right game concept, right?
Got two questions for you. Have you seen Energy Hook?
I have.
Speaking of grappling. I backed that, and it has some Oculus Rift support, third person now. Just if you like grappling, Metroid, and
it does,
get a
actually
kick out of that.
And when I first saw it, I had an oh shit moment, to be honest. Like, oh, is this... Am I doing something that's already being done and better?
I think there's room for a lot of different variations. This fellow is the Spider-Man 2 guy, and I just
right.
love the swinging in that game, so I think it works fairly similarly.
Which is actually one of the best grappling games.
Oh, yeah,
games,
absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the best games, I think. And also, I was curious, earlier you mentioned there was going to be some characters that you have to protect.
Right.
How does that work into the game with the grappling and the, like, is it platforming as well?
Yeah, so it all controls out like a platformer, but running behind it, all the characters are actually AI controlled with like emergent behaviors. So I won't go into too much detail. I don't want to bore you guys with all the details. there's just two. I'm trying to keep the scope, since it's a one-man operation, I'm trying to keep the scope simple. So there's two AIs at the moment. There's good guys and bad guys, basically. And the good guys are these cute little yellow-headed things that walk around the world, and they're hooking up. They're charging up nodes that you hook up using your grappling hook. I've got a quick video of it. If you look at my third video I've got out on the site, shows a little bit of this, where Kaz actually has to fire up these devices that will ultimately let him win the game, right? Ultimately let him repel the bad guys. And he wires them by hitting them with grappling hooks. And then these little guys have to come along and actually, almost like your units in a strategy game or like a city builder, these are like your little citizens. And they're actually called CITs, short for citizens in the game, because that's sort of the thinking, is they work sort of like those little citizens in an Age of Empires or something, who walk around the map just working on whatever it is that you've laid out.
Sounds cool. I will check out that video.
Please do, man. Please do. Let me know what you think. It's been an enormous amount of fun. And again, just figuring out what works in VR, and in a swinging game in particular, is this going to make everybody who plays it throw up immediately? Was my biggest concern. I don't think it has. I don't think anybody's thrown up yet. Because it's honestly, that kind of motion is a little bit vertigo-inducing even on a monitor, you know?
Well, it's intense amount of movement, and you got kind of an arc going, so there's a few different things going on there. I can see it being interesting.
But again, it has been my experience that if the motion seems realistic, it's more comfortable.
That makes sense.
So guys, go on.
Well, I was going to say, Kaz is pretty thrilling. I tried it out after I realized that you've been putting out lots of updates, and I just kind of missed it. But yeah, you've been doing great work on that. It's very polished now, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Hopefully, I'm doing the same as you, Drash. I've got that was just a demo of the swing mechanics, and now I'm a little bit keeping things under wraps until I've got something to show that's representative of the full game that I'm trying to work on, because I do want to actually work on this thing up until the commercial release of the Rift. Whether or not another year in the oven is going to make it taste any better, I don't know. But we'll see, right? You think you guys will have something ready for, I know we don't know when the commercial Rift will release, but you guys expect you'll have something for us to try out on our brand new shiny commercial Rifts?
Yeah, I'm going to be working on it until it's ready to go, so.
Nice. How about you, Kane?
Yeah, same here. I'm going to keep trying to improve it. I'm just learning. I'm having a blast doing it, so I can't see just throwing it away anytime soon. And, you know, if it just goes into the echo chamber, you know, hopefully, you know, it'll get to a point where at least I get a kick out of it, but hopefully other people will as well.
Excellent. All right, guys. Well, we have run up. We're 5 minutes ahead of time, so I'm giving you back like 4.5 minutes of your evening. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you too.
It wasn't stolen at all. Enjoyed the chat.
Thanks.